Speaking of scared, was there ever any alcohol involved during your time there?
Not flying. I never saw anybody. Did you, Charlie, drinking and flying?
No. Most of our guys would land, smoke pot, and then come back and fly some more.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Don't say it. I didn't drink hardly any at all because I had to play cards with him at night. I wanted to be sober. He took all our money.
That's right. That was another reason. I was poor as hell. There was another reason I wanted to live because I was winning money. I won $13,000 in 13 months. Anyway, thank you. but... No, you know, let me just say something about all the people that we flew with that we still keep in touch with. There is, you know, you're talking about a freight or addiction. It didn't matter how bad the weather, how bad the enemy was firing on us. Each one of our people, and this served all the Vietnam, this served all the bird dog pilots in Vietnam. It wasn't just the cat killers. But they strap on that stupid parachute that never worked. We never tried it. And put that helmet on. And they never shrank. It was just like the Jolly Green Giants coming in, picking up F-4 guys. I don't care how much fire. They never, never stopped coming in. It's just like General Brady, the Medal of Honor winner. Once he comes in, they're not going to leave anybody behind. And when you're a part of that team, it sounds phony, you know, it's 50 years later. But when you see the people that are sticking it out all the time, what are you going to do? Say, I can't get up there? I'm scared? No, no, no. And I always say this about courage. He knows that I loved it. So if I go out and I'm not scared and I do all this other stuff, that to me that's not courage. It's the guys, and Doc knows who they are, that were terrified sometimes, but they went into battle just as hard as I did. So when they say, well, you don't have anything, forget about what's up here. It's red, white, and blue. What's up here is that we all know, because we get to be with them at reunions. We know the people that all of them perform their mission. And that's why it's the greatest year of your life, because you have an experience unlike anything else. And it's only the people like Bill Reeder that, you know, you have to, landings are supposed to equal takeoffs, you know, and he's still short two, aren't you, Bill, because you never brought two of our airplanes back?
Well, Bill, that gets to Bill. You'd already flown one tour over North Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia.
Right.
Right? And you didn't have to go back.
That's true.
But you decided to go back. Flying Cobras. Why?
I did, because I wanted to very much. Charles and I were together in flight school in 1967 and 68, and I flew this bird dog with Charles during our time in flight school and got my 40 hours in the bird dog. But after graduation from flight school, Charles went right over to Vietnam in bird dogs. I went off to a qualification course in what was at the time the Army's most advanced aircraft. It was called an OV-1 Mohawk, built by Grumman Aircraft. It was a deep reconnaissance airplane, twin turboprops, quite nice. I managed to get shot down over the middle of Laos in that and had one ejection and one parachute ride, and that's one of the things that Charles was alluding to. I successfully completed that mission, taking more hits but no further shoot downs, and came home and finished my degree in Nebraska, and then was going back to Vietnam on a second tour, which I didn't have to do, but I wanted to go back badly. I guess that has something to do with the addictive nature of combat, but it was exciting. My first tour, I was a 22-year-old Army captain, unbelievable. My second tour, going back for the second time, was a 25 when I went back over. Now senior Army captain, just recently checked out in the Cobra attack helicopter, rotary wing qualified, and back for my second tour. Eager to see some combat as a Cobra pilot, a little different perspective than a Mohawk pilot, but worried, and this seems ironic with looking back on the Vietnam War, but worried when I went back at the end of 1971 that I had missed the war. Because if you remember the end of 71, it seemed like the war was over, and it seemed that we had won, at least that's what we thought. After Tet of 68, the enemy was pretty quiet. Things were quiet inside of South Vietnam. But they had something up their sleeves, and that was the Easter Offensive of 1972, which turned out to be the biggest communist offensive of the war, and I found myself right in the middle of it as a Cobra pilot.
May 9, 1972. What happened?
Yeah, May 9, 1972, the situation in the Central Highlands where I was, it's a central part of South Vietnam, had deteriorated rapidly with the big onslaught of the Easter Offensive. I should note that the U.S. had been withdrawing forces. There were no U.S. ground forces remaining in that part of South Vietnam, the Central Highlands. No ground forces, just Army aviation units, some Special Forces and some Air Force. That was it. So as the situation deteriorated, our Cobra unit became the fire brigade for that part of South Vietnam, launching out multiple missions a day, trying to quell enemy advances. By the 9th of May, everything in the Central Highlands had fallen to enemy hands, except for two cities, Kontum and Pleiku, and two firebase outposts at Poly Klang and Ben Het, and everything else had fallen. We got launched out on the 9th of May for a tactical emergency mission up at Ben Het. There were the elements of two North Vietnamese divisions. That equals several thousands of people, including tanks, large caliber anti-aircraft weapons, and artillery. Defending on the ground were two South Vietnamese Ranger battalions. That's about 500 people with two American advisors. And we launched out because they were losing, being overrun at the camp at Ben Het.
What happened?
Yeah, that turned out to be my fateful day. I was leading a flight of two Cobras. We went out and expended all of our ordnance, talked to the guys on the ground, very intense combat, the most intense I'd ever seen in the Vietnam War. Looked more like a World War II battlefield with the amount of tracers, artillery explosions, anti-aircraft airbursts, smoke filling the valley below the camp. We expended all of our ordnance, flew back to Kontum 40 miles away, rearmed, refueled, came back out for the second mission of the day, expended all of our ordnance, went back to Kontum once again to rearm, refuel, and headed back out to Ben Het. There used to be an Army ad that said, "We do more by 9 o'clock in the morning than most people do all day." I was having the feeling we had done more that morning in Vietnam than most people do in a lifetime. But out for our third mission, we received a radio call and told that the guys on the ground, the whole camp had been overrun. The survivors were up in the command bunker complex at the top of the hill. They were completely out of anti-tank ammunition, almost out of small arms ammunition, and would we cover a resupply? There was a Huey inbound, a UH-1 helicopter, filled to the gills with ammo, and would we cover that resupply? We agreed to do that, came in, decided to come in, and I think some of the pilots will appreciate this. The weather was getting worse and worse all morning long. The ceiling was now the solid cloud base below 1,000 feet, and I was leading a flight of three Army aircraft to get in there to Ben Het. With the Quad 50s were mentioned, we had 23-millimeter and 37-millimeter anti-aircraft going up. The last place we wanted to be with three olive drab Army helicopters was silhouetted on the base of clouds below 1,000 feet. So we came in right on the deck, put the Cobra or the Huey in the lead. I was staggered to his right rear. My wing was staggered to my left rear, and we covered him into Ben Het. The mission was a success. The Huey got in, kicked off the ammo, and I will note that the camp did survive through that battle. The Cobras were not so lucky. As he pulled off, the Huey pulled off to come outbound, and the Cobras turned in behind to continue our coverage of his path out, we started taking massive hits. I later, after the war, talked to one of the American advisors on the ground there, and he said it was just like we'd stuck a stick into a hornet's nest and had moved that all around, and the hornets just erupted. We were receiving fire from everything, from multiple positions. And I started taking hits from some pretty large caliber stuff, took out the tail rotor, took out the engine, rounds through the fuel cell. The aircraft was on fire, spinning and burning, impacted nose low on the left side, bounced up, spun another turn and a half, settled in, and exploded. Somehow the front seat and I got out of the aircraft, and I was in dire straits, in a very different world for a pilot to suddenly be on the ground in the jungle in the middle of one of the major battles of the Vietnam War.
Now, what was the condition of your partner?
I didn't know, because in a Cobra, one canopy door opens one way, one opens another way. I called on intercom up to him, and yeah, I guess for this mixed audience, I have a book that I'll be signing afterwards, and the exact words are in the book, but for this audience, it was, "Let's get out of this thing." Okay, that's good enough. And he acknowledged that call. So he went out one way, I went out another. I don't remember getting out of the aircraft. I remember for a time I was hung up, my feet were hung up on cords or belts, and I was hanging upside down out of the aircraft as it was burning and beginning to explode. The next thing I remember, I came to in the weeds some distance from the aircraft. I don't know how long I was unconscious. For most of the rest of the day, I fell in and out of consciousness. finally was able to get up and start first by crawling, ultimately by walking.
How hurt were you?
What I didn't know is my back was broken. I wouldn't find that out till I got released, because I didn't even think you could walk with a broken back, but my back was badly broken. I had burns on the back of my neck from the explosion. I had a piece of shell fragment through my right boot and into my ankle, which once I got moving, I was able to pull out. And then superficial wounds on my face. None of them were that severe, but head wounds bleed a lot, so I was just really covered with a lot of blood. That was my condition, and barely able to move. As I appraised my situation, I saw two choices. The guys, the friendlies, were only 300 or 400 yards away at Ben Hep. All I would have to do to get to them is get from my crash site across, and you've seen the pictures of the fire bases in Vietnam. It's all cleared around the fire base. So through that cleared out area, through multiple rolls of rolled barbed wire, concertina wire we called it, through anti-personnel minefields, all the while hoping that the enemy wouldn't kill me as I was going through that area through their attack, and that the friendlies wouldn't shoot me at the same time. So even though friendlies were close, I decided that wasn't going to work. My alternate plan, the only other plan I saw, was to head for Khon Tum, 40 miles away, in my condition, and try and move there to safety.